What's good? This is Logan Murdoch here for the Warriors HQ podcast. Hours after the Warriors just killed the... Is this the Lakers or the South Bay Lakers? What was this? I don't know. Who did they play tonight?
Is that the name of the team? I mean, I know that the Clippers have the Agua Caliente the South Bay Clippers. Lakers, it's the it South Bay Lakers. That's the what happened to the no Defenders?
How bad that nickname was. So they went with the South Bay Lakers. But I think that's who they were playing today. We got a Caruso sighting from the Lakers. But anyway, it was a blowout. The Warriors completely annihilated them in the third quarter of a 130-111 blowout in Staples Center when Klay Thompson had 44 points on 17 of 20 from the field and made his first 10 three-pointers. It was It was a ridiculous display today, and I think that's a good starting point for this podcast. What did you think of Klay's just ridiculous outburst? He was amazing today.
Some of that is, of course, just getting hot and doing a bunch of ridiculous heat checks. It's not as if they were all like wide open in the flow of the offense. I mean, there was a stretch of the third quarter when he's just like, I'm shooting. Like, you can't stop me from shooting. He pulled up one off balance from like 31 feet and knocked it in and then was giving money to Floyd Mayweather on the sideline. Like, it's one of those things where Klay gets hot like that, you got to get out of the way. I find the most interesting part, like, obviously Klay's been playing out of his mind in January and he wasn't doing all that hot. In the lead up to that, we were talking about slumps and when he was going to get out of it. And he's clearly out of it now. The big thing is he's just not dribbling anymore. And the Warriors are just finding them in the offense. He's not forcing anything. He's just letting the game come to him. And he was always going to regress, which is a positive thing. You regress to the mean and he was down. So he was going to come up, but man, 60% of his threes over the last like month have been on zero or one dribble. I think that's telling. That's up like 12-13% over the first part of the season.
That's where we get the best Klay Thompson, when it's in the flow of the offense, and also when he's getting the ball passed to him as opposed to creating his own offense. You remember a couple years back, the 60-point game where I don't know how many he took less than like 11 dribbles or something like that. It was
I think the dribbles tonight were 8. I think it was 8 dribbles on his 17 field goals. And some of those are 2. Yeah. So, I mean, he's got to dribble a little bit, presumably.
I don't know if Klay – I know Klay will be great on any team, but I don't know if he'll be as great on this as he is on this team, just for the simple fact that he is not asked on this team to create his own offense. It is within the flow of the offense. And that's how, you know, he gets hot. When you can – and all of a sudden, he's just pulling from 31, 32 feet, and to the point where the Lakers were literally triple teaming him off the ball and letting Kevin Durant getting free dunks to the lane. That's how hot Klay was tonight. And I think entering this game, you know, because Basketball Reference doesn't do the on the ball thing. No disrespect to Basketball Reference, but entering this game for the new year, he is averaging 26 points on 44 from three and 52.7. From field goal range, and that's in this calendar year. It's really been good for Klay, considering the sky was falling a few weeks ago.
I don't know if the sky was falling on that, but it was certainly cause for concern. There's a lot of other stuff that's happened. I think a lot of people are probably going to just go, well, the Warriors are on this 8-game winning streak now because Klay got his groove back. And like, there's no question that that's part of the calculus here. But there are other things in play, things like Draymond Green getting his act together. He's not scoring anything, but he is being the facilitator of the offense and the fulcrum of defense. I think Kevin Durant has taken maybe a half step back in a good way, where he's not being as forceful and he's feeling the flow a little bit. He only had 20 points against the Lakers, but when he was on, I mean, he's still getting his shots. Don't get me wrong. I think he put Mo Wagner back in the G League, but like, man, it just doesn't feel as forced. It doesn't feel as heavy. He's definitely not dribbling as much. And beyond that, I think that he's really taken a step forward on the defensive side in the new year. We know what Steph is. Steph actually had a pretty poor game. He went 3 of 12 on the field with 11 points against the Lakers. Exactly. I was just about to say at plus 27, yeah, the only guy better, Klay Thompson at plus 29. And Klay went off for 44 on 10 of 11 from three. But like the whole, and I think DeMarcus Cousins has helped this a little bit too in the last two games, but it's really been the starter sort of locking in and figuring out that they just need to do less. They need to stop forcing it as much because they weren't really jiving all that well. Durant was kind of doing his own thing. He was carrying over maybe some of the baggage that he was carrying when Steph wasn't around, and he gets in his own head about stuff like that, and he had to do more and all this stuff, and it hadn't resettled. He hadn't figured out how to sort of mesh it all together. Steph comes in, he's playing his ass off, doing great stuff, but sometimes, of course, you know, Steph gets hot. Everyone else has got to get out of the way. You add in Draymond not really knowing where his offensive game was. It's all clicking at the right time. And I think Boogie coming in only, you know, adds to that positivity. This has been the shocker of all shocks for me, if we're being honest. Like, Boogie fitting in so seamless. We know how stupid talented he is, but man, he's like such a good passer. He had five assists against the Lakers, and it just looks right. It just looks right. And, yeah, that and the one other thing I got to drop here, like Andre Iguodala has been out of his mind good over the last few weeks.
Andre is usually saves that for the playoffs. Is this? That's what I was gonna say.
I'm a little concerned, right?
First of all, you are the negative Nancy of this crew, but
I understand. I got to play my role
about this. I mean, he played another great game. Plus 80 was 6 points. Didn't miss a shot tonight. What do you make of this? Do you think that is something that can be sustained, or?
Well, I was talking to some people on Friday down in LA, and they're like, "What choice did he have but to turn his game up?" Right? Like Steve admitted before they left on that road trip, Andre didn't try the entire like 17-18 regular season. Of course, that's not entirely true. I remember certain games where he would get up, but like, let's be honest, he sandbagged it a little bit just to conserve his energy and all that stuff. And then in the playoffs, really went off. He had an excellent playoffs, in my opinion. This year, he's had to turn it up here. I would say since a little bit before Christmas, or maybe even halfway when Steph was out, and it was just like, This is it's go time. He had to fill a role, but that was because the Warriors bench was in such a bad situation. Like he needed to earn his salary. He couldn't just wait until the end of the regular season. I'm interested to see now with Boogie in tow and Boogie looking comfortable. He played 21 minutes tonight, played more than Iguodala. If maybe Andre starts to tone it down a little bit. I'm not saying that he should, but I mean, if last year he was thinking, I can't go hard all season and still have something in the tank for the playoffs, I mean, I don't know why that would change year over year unless he went to Germany and got some platelets or something. So I'm a little bit concerned about it, but he's smart. I mean, certainly I'm not going to tell him how to handle his body or anything like that. If he feels good, keep playing good, because what he brings to the court doesn't always show up on the box score. I know that we say that time and time again, but when he's playing well, the Warriors have no choice but to play well.
Switching gears a little bit, you kind of touched on it at the beginning. I think we should just get right into it. The return of Boogie. You were at the game on Friday night in Los Angeles against the Clippers, and he played really well. He had 14 points. And he had some assists. He had some good rebounds. He had some great moments. He fouled out. It was the
15 minutes, six fouls, baby.
You know,
summer
side
league.
Note, I think that there's an appreciation from you of that stat line of 6 fouls in 15 minutes, because I think that is your game.
Oh, entirely. And I like to say beyond that, he was so tired. Like, he was totally gassed. And that's why the final foul happened. And, like, everyone was cheering him off because they knew he had nothing left. It was diminishing returns after that.
How did you – going into that, and as far – what was your expectations of him going into that game versus actually what happened?
Well, I actually – we were talking at Shootaround on Friday. I was talking to some other beat guys, and they were kind of predicting what the shifts would look like and the schedule would look like, and I nailed it to a T. So I'm still feeling good about that. I'm riding. Yeah, like just like three minutes at the beginning. He's going to be too tired. Play like 4 or 5 minutes at the beginning of the second. Do it about 4 or 5 minutes of the third, and then we'll see in the fourth. Like, and it was just bang on. So I thought that I didn't expect him to be as strong as he was, right? This is on me. This is a mea culpa. I forgot how stupid talented DeMarcus Cousins
Shame
is.
Shame on you.
Like, I hadn't seen him in a year. When he was in New Orleans, I'll be totally honest, I try to watch some Pelicans basketball from time to time. It's not as obvious to me. You know, it just doesn't pop off the screen. When you don't see this guy in person, it's hard to recognize how ridiculous he is. I mean, this dude has Kevin Durant's skill set, obviously not to the extreme circumstances, but a Kevin Durant-style skill set where he can do pretty much anything he wants on the floor, inside and outside, except he's like 80 yes. pounds heavier. Like, that's not fair. That's not fair. And I was just a little bit surprised. I wasn't shocked that he was gassed. I wasn't shocked that he didn't exactly have the hops. I was shocked at how strong he was underneath the hoop and his ability to just, you know, it's like that YouTube video with the hippo and he's got a bunch of lions on his back and he's just kept going. There was one play, it won't show up if you're going through the highlights or something, but he took on four Clippers and got to the line. Like, that's something that the Warriors have not had. And then a couple of plays later, he goes out and knocks down back-to-back three-pointers. And it's like, this is a whole new ballgame. I didn't expect him to look this good this early. I know that he's got so much more to go. I mean, it's obvious he's got so much more to go. But, man, if this is the baseline, holy crap.
What was the vibe of that game? Was it a playoff-level vibe? How was that leading into it? How was it that Friday night going into his first game? Did it feel regular season-ish? How did it feel being in L.A.?
It's kind of one of those two things. Like, a Clippers game never feels like a playoff game. I say this as a former Angelino. Like, dude, like I was talking to somebody in the elevator at the hotel across the street from Staples Center when I was checking out, and a bunch of kids from the Bay Area. And I said, "What's up?" And they're like, "You know, you at the game last night?" I'm like, "Yeah, where'd you guys sit?" And they're like, "Oh man, we were like 30, 40 rows back." And I'm like, "Wow, lower bowl? That's pretty awesome. How much you guys pay for that, if you don't mind?" They're like, $60 yeah. bucks. Like, you got me.
I remember man, friends like, going down back in the heyday, going down to Clippers Warriors games in LA because it was cheaper to go to LA than it was to go at Oracle.
That was, yeah. Like my girlfriend and I, whenever she would come down, we would go to Clippers games because it was $20 and we can sit club level and they would like give you a beer too. And then I wanted to go to one Lakers game and the Lakers were garbage, like worse than they are or they were on Monday night, like that level, you know, South Bay Lakers. And it was like $250 to get in. So that's what we're dealing with on the baseline. There was just as many Warriors fans as there were Clippers fans. And frankly, I think I saw more Lakers jerseys than I saw Clippers jerseys. So the crowd was more of a show, right? It more felt like, you know, we're all going to go see a movie or something. It wasn't engaged. There was no antsiness. There was no pressure. It was just, let's see how this goes. It was kind of a fun atmosphere. With the media, it absolutely felt like a playoff atmosphere. Like, everyone was so curious. We were all, you know, kind of talking in whispers and all this stuff. And then he comes out and he dunks it, and you're just like, even at that moment, even though it doesn't make any sense and you don't want to jump to conclusions and all this stuff, at that moment, you just knew. Like, intrinsically, if you were in the building, you knew this dude is back. Like, this is not a fluke. He is going to be some semblance, a good semblance of the DeMarcus Cousins that we knew before the injury, and that makes the Warriors damn near unbeatable.
And it seemed like that dunk, he was getting something out, a lot of just oomph to get out.
It could not have been a better play, right? Like, he knocks down a three where he does some turnaround jumper. It's not as visceral. It doesn't. It's not as like carnal almost. Like, but he gets that dunk and he yelled. I mean, he happened right in front of me, yelling at the rim, and it was just all of the anger and pain and BS that's happened to him over the last year, just kind of coming out, and just it was an announcement, and you couldn't help but feel the emotions of that moment. I mean, the Warriors bench was out of control. I mean, for the first like 10 minutes of the game, it was like and one mixtape on the bench. Anything that they did, they were just losing their mind.
From a standpoint of I know you like to talk into X's and O's. Did you see how they can integrate Boogie and how it's just going to be ridiculous? At what point did you feel that, wow, if this keeps going up this path, this is going to be something else?
Well, it was interesting because it seemed to me as if they were using him more I thought that they would use him more in like a David West role, right? But it's, and listen, that's there. But it seemed to me as if they used him more as Draymond at center than anything else, which I found interesting. So there were post-ups where he would sort of run the offense through the low post. We've seen that with Durant. We've seen that with Clay even at times, but we mostly see it through Draymond. There was the high post stuff. And then they were pretty simple about it, if we're being totally honest. They're obviously running off action, but just the high pick and roll. And what really struck me from that, and it's just, again, one of these things that you forget, or maybe I didn't forget. I don't know. You tell me. Like, Boogie, when he sets a screen, you yes. die. Like, that dude is he's the wall. And, man, like, even if he can just do that, like, he's the best screen setter I've seen on the Warriors ever. And the Warriors have had really good screen setters. Like, Zaza Pachulia existed on this team for several years for the sole purpose of being able to set a screen. And Boogie immediately came out. I don't know who bounced off of him, but he bounced off of him. And it was in the first quarter, and you just went, oh, again, this is a totally different thing. Plus, it's not as if he can roll, as we saw with the dunk, or he can pop. And that pop was so deadly. The Clippers don't have good centers. I mean, that's kind of going without saying. Like, they were throwing Gortat on him. Gortat was washed.
Yeah.
They were throwing Montrezl Harrell on him, and Montrezl Harrell couldn't keep up with his weight. And then they put my man Boban on him, trying to, like, maybe muscle him out. And all Cousins went to do is just shot back-to-back threes and ended the game in the middle of the third quarter. Yeah, exactly. Like, if... Again, I wrote in the column, if this is the baseline, he's better than 90% of the NBA right. centers. And if he has room to grow, he's in the top 10 players in the NBA. I don't know if that he'll get there this year, but certainly that's his ceiling. So that's not fair. I mean, it's over. It's over if that's the case.
Yeah, how did so let's switch gears. We got the DeMarcus thing, but there was something that happened after towards the end of tonight's game, actually, was Jordan Bell and Steve Kerr getting into it. And it seemed like
it didn't seem positive.
It was coming out of a timeout. We saw it, and they just start. I mean, I can only guess about what happened at this point. Probably be wrong, but I'd imagine, you know, Steve probably got on him about a play and just ensued off of that. But what was your take on that?
Man,
I saw you on Twitter. I do agree with you on a lot of things you said on Twitter.
It's ironic because I had just been talking to somebody on Friday night about how Jordan was doing, and they were raving. And obviously, there's always going to be sort of that spin. I get it. I don't get the full story, but mostly unsolicited raving does go pretty far with me. And so it was interesting to see, but you know, again, the raving, I'm like, well, what are we comparing this to? And they kind of go into it. And Jordan's frustrated with where he's at. I don't think that's a secret to anybody. And the coaching staff is frustrated at, you know, they're putting a lot of work in on him and they don't feel like the lessons are sticking. And so I don't know what happened in that huddle, but certainly there was, you know, it was kind of a powder keg situation. Like, it doesn't shock me at all that Kerr and Jordan got into it. I don't know if it's a misunderstanding, as Kerr said, or if it was a bigger misunderstanding, but everyone's a little bit frustrated with where Jordan Bell's game is right now, and there's only one way for him to get out of it. He has to simplify his game to a certain degree and just be reliable, because all season he has not been right or wrong. The Warriors coaching staff doesn't feel he's reliable to put on the floor in minutes that matter. He is a last ditch option for this team. Again, I don't know if that's the right or the wrong answer, but no one's happy about where stuff is right now.
You know, I think that Jordan, if you look at his last few games, you see that he hasn't played as bad as we've seen in the beginning of the season.
That's one of the reasons they were raving about him on Friday. They really liked those 7 minutes that he played.
But I do think, like, if you look at his last few games, you know, Steve always says his company line is that he's going to play you. If you're in a slump or in the doghouse and you play well, he's going to reward you with minutes on the next game. that's been his line right. since he's gotten there with young guys. And if you look at this, if you look at Jordan's last few games, you know, he has a really good game. Remember in Phoenix, I think it was New Year's Eve, where he has 10 points, makes all of his shots, has 6 rebounds, just plays well, plays a Jordan Bell game that we were accustomed to seeing last year. And the next game, he gets 7 minutes, and it's against Houston, in a game that you might think he would play, you know, a lot more minutes.
Right. That's a matchup that typically lends itself to him playing.
And then, you know, he doesn't get the minutes that he thought he would supposed to get rewarded with. And then he plays another game in against Chicago.
He was awesome against Chicago.
But a lot of that was in garbage time minutes. So he's thinking he had 13 points, was 6 of 10 from the field, played another game that we thought, you know, that we saw last year. The next game he doesn't play. He plays 7 minutes. So I guess in his mind, he's thinking, you know, I should be getting more minutes. Like, I feel like I'm playing how you think I should be playing.
Yeah.
And
but isn't that weird, though? I mean, you look at this, like, he is getting the minutes. Like, compared to where he was at. I mean, maybe not like where it was in December when Steph was out and stuff, but like he got 15, 8, 9. He got 4 minutes against the Clippers. Maybe that's where he's angry about. I don't know.
I mean, also 3 minutes. You think it's all that? Also on a blowout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He didn't get the minutes that he was. And I just think that honestly, it seemed like something that was pent up for a long time. And I don't think it was just that one play. I think it was both sides just pent up for a long time. And you kind of saw that with, you know, how that was. And I think to your point, though, you tweeted this out. I don't think that this goes anywhere other than on the floor. Honestly, I think that
totally.
I think that Steve got his issue off and Jordan got all the frustrations he's had off. And Jordan got back in the game after that. It wasn't like, you know, sit down.
Right.
And so I don't think this is going to linger for too long, but I do think that they got out what they needed to get out for sure.
But let's say this. I mean, we're talking about big frustration, stuff that had been building up, all this stuff. It is very difficult to be a young player on this Warriors team. And this has been an issue all year, all dynasty. I mean, you think about a guy like Evans, like he's down in the G League right now. They're not even carrying him on the roster. He's a first round draft pick. You look at a guy like Quinn Cook, who was so good for this team down the stretch of last year, in many ways stabilized this team at the time that they needed it most. I mean, listen, I'm an outspoken Quinn Cook doubter, but like the guy has a role. And right now, he doesn't get consistent playing time. You don't know what his role is on a night-in, night-out basis. Jonas Jerebko, he's a veteran. He gets the gist, but he's out. I mean, he's out of the rotation straight up. And the only guy that seems to have sort of stuck as a young guy is Alphonso McKinney. And McKinney brings
and
it every night.
McKinney's also 25 years old and has been through multiple stops all over the world. So
I don't want to give Jordan, you know, too much slack for being young. He did play 4 years in college. He is, you know, 24 years old. I mean, just because he's, you know, second year pro, like McKinney's a first year pro. I don't know what he is. I mean, I guess he's been a pro in Luxembourg, but that's kind of a different thing. Like it comes down to reliability. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Warriors coaching staff has it all figured out and that Jordan Bell needs to shut up and get in line. I think that he has valid gripe in, listen, man, I was good for this team last year. I can be good for this team this year, but not if I don't get any run. But he does need to play a more stable game. And listen, right before that, I went back and rewound it on the DVR. Right before the blow up, he was freelancing all over the place. And if I'm Kerr and I see that and then he comes in and who knows what happened, but any sort of thing goes off in that huddle, it's like, man, what have we been dealing with all year? All we've been trying to do is get you to stop freelancing and to play a more basic game. And then we'll build up from there. And you just can't seem to help yourself. And that's got to be frustrating for the coaching staff. And I get it. It's going to be frustrating for Jordan Bell because anytime he gets in there, he's got to show out. He has to do his best because he doesn't know when his next minutes are going to come. They need to figure out a plan that both parties can get on the same page with, because the veterans know how to handle it, but even the veterans know that it sucks. Like Zaza Pachulia took it like a pro last year, but Zaza knew that it was his last year. JaVale left on the sole premise of he was sick of getting, you know, jocked around with it, with his minutes. Like, this wears on dudes, and the fact that Kerr's rotations, I'm not going to fault him for doing the rotations to win games, but the fact that there doesn't seem to be necessarily a plan to get young players integrated, despite the fact that that seemed to be a main focus of this year, is a concern not only for the players that they have now, but a concern going forward, is they need to develop some damn young players to fill roster spots going forward, because Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston are not going to be there to cover up holes.
Well, another thing is, out of all the young guys, Jordan's the only one that is struggling. I guess you can put Kevon Looney, not struggling, but the one of the only guys that is in a contract year out of the young guys. Kevon is too, but Kevon has a stable role. Yeah. That's something that Jordan has to do.
Kevon's also, you know, Kevon's in his fourth year.
I know Kevon came on last year, but Kevon had time to grow within this team on the low in a way that Jordan hasn't.
For sure.
He went through the surgeries. Well, especially because he went through all these different things. And he was way more under the radar than Jordan was. He did not have the pressure that Jordan had this season and last year.
I talk about this on national stuff a lot. Like, the Celtics have kind of this issue, right? So Jason Tatum's like 12, 13 points per game in his rookie season because he's 19 years old. And like, everyone likes him and they think he's a good player. And then he goes off in the Eastern Conference Finals, and he is the star of the Eastern Conference Finals right after Mr. LeBron James. And it totally changes the paradigm for a young player. Now he's not just a guy who, you know, he was 12 points a game last year, let's get him to 15. There's no progression, right? Now it's you are a superstar today because you had a really good series. And listen, he's super talented and all, but a really good series doesn't make a player. Same with sort of Donovan Mitchell to a certain extent last year, and you see the struggles this year. It is really hard to live up to expectations that might be outsized when you're a young player in the NBA, because this league will chew you up and spit you out really easily. And Bell was a big impact player for this team, particularly down the stretch last year, and there were moments in the playoffs when they needed Jordan Bell. And man, that it's got to warp your mind a little bit into thinking that I don't know how you can't think that you've made it to a certain extent when you're getting NBA Finals minutes, big NBA Finals minutes. I don't know how. And so then to be told the next year, like, you know, less is more, and, you know, you haven't earned anything yet, that's got to be tough to justify in your mind.
And it's something that he said he hasn't been thinking about, free agency coming up, but you know, that's something that has to be on your mind. Like, you know, you're a young guy. He 100%. Has the rest of his career. He's only 24 years old. He has the rest of his basketball time to look forward to. And I mean, and I think when you have that and you're young, it can be a tough spot. And so, you know, that's a lot of stuff that he's dealing with. I think that I think it wasn't just tonight. You know, just that instance that led to the blow up. It's you know, stuff that is locked in.
This has been lingering.
So I think, you know, biggest thing is Steve let him go back on the floor, and we'll see what happens after this. You know,
they got to deal with it. I mean, that's the other thing too. Like, Steve let him go back on the floor. That's good. I don't think it's really been dealt with, if I'm being totally honest, just kind of understanding how this goes. But this, I think it's good, because these two need to figure out what the hell's going on. Steve's not going to go and try to figure out, you know, how Jordan Bell feels about things. He's got enough other crap going on with this super team or whatever. And it's not as if they were all clicking together up until recently. So they probably needed to have, you know, a mano a mano here just to figure out what it is, you know, how they're going to progress going forward. And I think Steve and Bob Myers and the entire coaching staff need to kind of look themselves in the eye a little bit and wonder what they're doing to help these younger players. I mentioned it earlier before, but like the Patrick McCaw thing, yes, Patrick McCaw was probably in the wrong, if there's a right or wrong in this situation. He got bad advice and it backfired. The Warriors made him two fair offers. He turned it down because he wanted more playing time. But those emotions of wanting more playing time were not outrageous, right? Like, he did not feel like he was being nurtured in the Warriors system. And there are certain, I mean, I don't know if Jordan Bell, I think, will, you know, is enough of a pro and smart enough to keep his mouth shut. But, man, some of this frustration, you can't help but place that on him, right? You can't help but think, knowing what we know, that he's got to feel some sort of the same way. And there, I bet Jacob Evans is probably feeling that too, and he's playing down in Santa Cruz. Like, man, I'm kind of getting sent out here to die on the vine. And man, I thought, you know, Jacob Evans, I thought I was supposed to be an impact player year one. That's why you drafted me. Jordan Bell, I thought I was a guy who you trusted in the NBA finals. Now you can't trust me to play garbage time. A lot of frustrations there, and the Warriors do need to start figuring this out, because again, they're going to need to actually develop some young players beyond Kevon Looney. They don't have a choice.
I mean, and that's one of the underlying things, right? I mean, they're young. They have not cashed in on their young guys. They haven't. I mean, and for whatever reason.
And this is how dynasties end.
And I mean, for whatever reason, and you can go back. Go back years is what Nedovic back in the day. Like, they have.
You'd be telling me.
I mean, like, just it's you got at some points you have to, especially when your stated goal is we're going to go a youth movement.
It's totally untrue. We found that out to be the case.
Yeah, if you're going
to
say that, you have to develop the guys, and it just hasn't happened for whatever reason. But it's funny we're saying this like the sky is falling. The Warriors have won. Eight straight,
and have been completely dominant pretty much the entire time.
And we'll probably be dominant against Washington and going and later in the week. So
I don't know, man. I kind of like the way Washington's playing, if I'm being totally honest.
Okay.
Like, Bradley Beal is a hell of a player. Trevor Ariza's brought them something nice. Like, I'm not saying that the Wizards are anywhere on the par of the Warriors, but like, don't just walk in. Don't just walk in and expect a W.
Four of their last five and lost.
So I'm saying
their lone loss in that five game stretch was a 140-138 double overtime in Toronto. So I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, they're playing good ball. Don't expect to walk into the Capital One Center and walk out with a dub. Like, the Wiz can play. It's funny how that works. John Wall goes down and they start playing good ball. Stay awake, everybody.
Stay woke. Keep your third eye open. So, in the meantime, we will catch you guys later in the week. This has been the Warriors HQ podcast. You can find all our work at themercurynews.com, eastbaytimes.com. You can find Dina's columns there. You can find Mark Medina's work. And if you go into your inboxes, you will find the Warriors HQ newsletter done and manicured and all done by moi. Where you can find our podcast, you can find our takeaways, you can find Dieter's columns, you can find all of Mark Medina's work.
It's a one-stop shop. You need some Warrior stuff right in your inbox. Don't have to worry about going and searching around.
So we have that going on. Follow us on Twitter, D. Kurtenbach, Mark_G_Medina, Logan M. Murdoch. I am going to be throwing out hot music takes. The James Blake album is pretty good. I'm listening to the Future album too. So okay. I'll be having all that there for you. So tap in.
How do you feel about post-experimental punk? Because I have some takes
post-experimental,
on that.
Give me some, you know, that'll be down the line. That'll be on our playoff pots.
We're working up to it.
But in the meantime, tap in. We'll talk to you very, very, very soon.